Marty, you set a record in 10 minutes. We only got 11 lawsuits.
No, okay. No. I must say, I appreciate being here because I could be me. And I mean that, man.
I'm kidding.
I did come in here.
Thank you. We love having you, too. It does a great job for us.
He looks so serious. You say so many funny things, he looks serious. Boy, that's killed
but
me.
But I'm funny serious.
Yeah, you killed me.
You know, you're good enough, and I'm serious now, that there are a couple of people around doing parts of your act.
I hope they make it.
You know, a curious phenomenon has cropped up in America recently, and I, for one, have been very interested in its development. A resurgence of interest in the Depression has worked its way into popular music, art, and literature. Our next guest has taken that very subject as the theme of his new book, appropriately called Hard Times. And this is going to be a smash, this book. Would you greet its author, Mr. Studs Terkel? You've been getting some great reviews, and interestingly enough, sometimes when you get a good review in, like, the New York Times, the New York Daily News won't be too good, but they were both very good.
Yeah, I'm startled by it, astonished. I'm just trying to wonder why. It's something about that time. I think it's that longing, not longing for the time, but looking back why it happened, the young and the old, I think.
That's right.
That period, the Depression.
Before we get into this, I knew you in Chicago. I never got around to asking you the name Studs. Where did you get it?
There was a novel called Studs Lonergan.
I read it.
By Farrell. My name's Louis as an Armstrong.
Yeah.
But I can't do West End Blues.
Yeah.
Or Heebie-Jeebies. Or Sketch.
It was kind of a racy book in its day. Today it would be kind of bland, wouldn't
today
it?
Today it's a bland book. At the time was considered, I was very serious. I said, great human document. Carrying on my arm all the time. And then I became a sportscaster. And the agency said, what a great name for a sportscaster. I said, what sport are you talking about? Would that were so.
Yeah, because I read the book, yeah.
How long have you been interviewing people for this book?
About 2-3 years. Some would say all my life, really. Curiosity. But I'd say for this book, about 2 years or so.
Why did you have to put this here, The Great Depression?
It's known as that. You see, we think of the Depression. Now and then there are periods of recession, but the Great Depression is the one that we think stemming from the Wall Street crash of October 29, up to the war, really.
Up to 41, World War II?
Up to the invasion of Poland, say, to about 39. Yeah. Now, there was, Roosevelt, of course, came along with many of the New Deal measures, but there still were 10 million unemployed when the war broke out. Because a lot of people felt the Depression long before Wall Street did.
Oh, yes.
The farmers, particularly. So in the 20s, a lot of people say, I was born in Depression, I'm still in it, you know.
How did you get the idea, and why did you think a book like Hard Times would make it now, and it's going to be a big bestseller?
I didn't think of it. This publisher, Pantheon, said, how about trying this book using the tape recorder? Of course, the sound of human voices is terribly important. Many of the people who were survivors of Depression won't be here 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Many in the book have died since, old dragons of the past, old-timers, old heroes, you know. And so getting the sound of the human voice and putting it on paper, you can capture things that a historian can't capture, the actual experiences.
Oh, yeah. Louis was talking about the Depression, and we went through it, so it's strange in that, and I'm sure Louis will agree, you look back at those days as being kind of happy moments, because I was too young to realize what was going on, but I didn't ever miss anything. I mean, I had a great childhood, you know.
Even in the days of the Boll Weavers, you know, way back in the 1915, you know.
Yeah, there was. See, Louis talking about the Depression back then. He's a Boll Weevil, the Southern
farmers.
Yeah, I was
15 years old. You
the
know
sharecroppers. But isn't it true, Louis, Mike, isn't it true people sometimes have a tendency to block out the bad things?
Yeah.
No, I like to remember those
No, I mean, some people block out the bad, remember only the good. Some people have this, but you remember both.
That's right.
They might tell you they're blocking out the bad things and remembering the good, but they're remembering the bad things. Well, how did you decide who to interview when doing a book like Hard Times?
Well, how do you work out a cross-section? That's a difficult thing. I knew I had to see some farmers.
Of course.
And the farmers were embattled And how is labor organized? And also young people, too.
Young people?
Yeah, young people. I want to know, what, when I say the word depression, what does it mean to people born, you know, 20 years ago? And they say it's a strange, rare thing. They hear it only as a bawling out from their parents, scolding.
Yep.
Oh, you're lucky, you never had it so good. But they really don't know, because they blocked out the bad. So it's the parents' fault for not telling them the real truth about the... And the young, some of the kids say the depression is further removed from me than the Civil War or medieval days, because something blocked out completely. You can't condemn them. It's not their fault. They haven't really been told about it.
Did anyone that you wanted to interview for this turn you down?
Well, only a few. Well, some died before I got to them. Mm. But, yeah, but there was Father Coughlin, but he was busy working on his own. Remember Father Coughlin?
Yes.
Now, perhaps young people may not remember him. He was quite a figure and very anti-Roosevelt and... Well, quite a figure. Anyway, but you remember Father Coughlin?
I know of him.
On Sundays. But he was working, he was from Royal Oak, Michigan, and he was very anti-FDR and anti-many things. But he was working on his own book, a gracious letter, but he's the only one who turned me down, whom I tried to approach fully. A couple of advisors, a couple of advisors of Roosevelt, Tommy Corcoran, who's now a big lobby lawyer, turned me down. He was ill, and a couple of others. Outside of that, pretty good luck.
What's happening, Studs? I mean, I sense this growing interest in the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're bringing back songs like Louie would remember, the Billie Holiday song, God Bless the Child, songs like that. Everything's coming, you know, things like that are coming back.
You know,
I heard the Supremes do Brother, Can You Spare a Dime the other day. Why is this growing interest?
I think there's several reasons for it. I think, for one thing, the young are hungry for truth. As Monty has intimated, you know, the young are hungry for a truth that's been denied them. The pictures, of course, they don't shoot horses, do they?
Oh,
or
yes.
Bonnie and Clyde, for that matter.
They shoot horses, don't they?
They shoot horses, don't they?
Bonnie and Clyde.
And God Bless the Child is a Billie Holiday number, and she, by the way, was vulnerable. Monty mentioned vulnerability. Louis is vulnerable. To be an artist, you have to, in a sense, it seems to me, you reveal yourself, and therefore you're open, you're human, and you're hurtable.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience, when it feels somebody's vulnerability, the audience feels mortal and vulnerable, too, and that's an artist.
What can be gained by this new interest, though?
I think a great deal can be gained. See, if we don't know, there's an old saying, if you don't know your past, you're doomed to relive it in the future. We gotta know, how can people know who they are unless they know where they came from?
Mm-hmm.
And when you block out a past, mistakes will be repeated again. Want to know why it happened? What did people do to survive under those circumstances? The humor, there's a great deal of humor in the book, too. There's always a tremendous amount of laughter, as Louis Armstrong well knows, laughter and adversity. That's a great deal of that.
Oh, yes. Comedy and tragedy, closely related.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true that you believe that the Depression is the true cause of the generation gap?
Well, I believe it, yes. It's just my feeling after... And this is unofficial, it's just my own, I could be wrong. But it's not the war, and it's not the bomb. It's the Depression, because when people didn't have a job and had the terror of not having a job, and the father lost face coming home, from then on, he's going to make it. Possession is important, things are important, and so more and more property becomes terribly important to him. Whereas to the kid who didn't do that, the kid says, wait a minute, and this is interesting, he says, there's something else to life than that. And so you have this gap between the two. And someone says, why you toss dough away that promiscuously to the kid? The kid says, dough is not that important, says the kid of a middle-class family. Of course, we have pockets. But I think the Depression is the key.
My daughter is listening. Margaret Mead was here not long ago. Dr. Mead said that it was, she thought it was World War II that caused the generation.
Yeah, well, I admire Margaret Mead. She's a marvelous anthropologist, but I disagree with her on this point. I feel that she's wrong about that, because she's missed a key. And the key is attitude toward property. The key is an experience of not having a job. Today, young kids have quit the job, he'll go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I would disagree with Dr. Mead.
Some of the chapters have the names of songs.
Oh, songs,
popular songs.
Yeah.
Musical connotations.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah. Well, I thought the songs tell us, like Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is a Beatles song. And that's about young people, interviewing the young. Because one of the lyrics in it, I forget, something happened, 20 years ago, we find rather amusing. The Depression was 40 years ago. Hard Traveling is a Woody Guthrie rambling song.
God Bless the Child.
God Bless the Child. That's a child's memory of his father's shame, in a way. And those are people who were kids then. Remember the old man coming home? Mm-hmm. And not having the job and tension in the family as a result.
16 ton?
16 ton, obviously, mining. You know,
sure. See the mining. More with Mr. Studs Terkel, the author of Hard Times, following this. Be right back. What are some of the memorable reflections in the book, Studs?
There's so many. You know, there are about 160 or so people who reflect, some more at length than others. And the humor, I think of Sally Rand, of course. Sally Rand, the fan dancer.
Oh,
she
yes.
was the big hit of the Chicago World's Fair of 1933-34. And people think of Sally Rand as sort of a gamey figure, but she was very bright.
Oh,
she knew the times.
I've had her on this show. I
yeah.
know she's bright.
She tells how she discovered the meaning of the fan, you know. She knew several bootleggers, and they got her a job at a club. Nobody's working then. And the guy didn't want to hire her, but these bootleggers sort of told the guy, you'd better, else there'd be a little, you know, a little trouble. And so she used to study with Anna Pavlova. That is, she studied the dancing of Anna Pavlova. At the same time, she'd say, how could I do this dance? So she said, I go into Mabel Shear's costume shop, and I see these two fans, and I wave them, the kind of fan that a prima donna says has one when she takes a high note. Is the way she described it. I look in the mirror, there's that inscrutable smile. I said, that does it. Because with a fan, you're a femme fatale, she says. And so even in Kansas, she came from a Baptist background. Even in church, a little woman, a poke bonnet, has a fan. She waits, she becomes Cleopatra. And so there I was, all set to go on, says Sally. And I would lose the job unless I went on, but I left my Grecian tunic at the hotel room, she said. So I come on with the fans, the shoes, period, as she put it. And the guy starts playing the piano, and she goes on. And she says, nobody noticed it. Proving, as she says, the Rand is quicker than the eye, is the way she put it. You know. And then she said, nobody paid attention because they were listening to the piano players. Pianos were on wheels in those days. Remember the pianos going around the tables, Louis?
Sure.
Singing sad songs, you know, dancing with tears in my
and
eyes.
Nobody was paying attention.
No, I didn't even know that she
they
had
were drinking
on.
His moonshine. They were all numb.
Of course, that was the Prohibition period,
oh,
too.
Sure.
And then following it. But here she made an interesting observation. She was Lady Godiva once. She crashed a big society ball as Lady Godiva on a horse, went into the ballroom on a horse with a long locks and nothing else. And some of the socialites were furious with her, said she was vulgar. And then she asked me this question. It's sort of a rhetorical question. She says, tell me something. Who's more vulgar? People are starving outside. This woman imports a dress from Paris made of $1,000 bills while people are starving. Who's more vulgar, me or this woman?
Hmm.
That's Sally, the social observer. She
what,
was great.
What are some of the others?
There was a guy named Doc Graham. I got to, since I'm from Chicago. Chicago was known, you know, for the Al Capone gangs.
No kidding. My hometown was not that.
Also, a guy named Bugs Moran. Ever have Bugs Moran?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this guy's name is not his real name. Doc says, I was a heist man, a con man. I lived by guile, by wits, by everything. And he didn't like FDR, so I tried to fire him four times. Why? I said, why? Because he was a con man, lived by guile, by wits. He's describing himself. And then he goes on to say, once I was absolutely, he uses fancy words. He says, I found myself in jail 12 Saturdays in a row. So I knew something is wrong with my modus operandi. That's the way he would speak, see? And then once a lady of the evening points out a large score to me. Score someone who has money. Oh, can you believe it? I didn't have my wearing apparel with me, my S&W wearing apparel. And I said, S&W, he says, Smith & Wesson. and so I hail a nearby patrol car. I said, police car? Yes, they knew me very well. And I explained to them, there's a man who has to be relieved of his funds. So they graciously lent me their pistol. So after I relieved him of his funds, the police searched me thoroughly. They wanted an honest count. And then after that, he says, the young today have no respect for law and order. So this is something I remember, an interesting observation of that period.
Well, thinking back, what are some of the good things that came out of the Depression?
I think one of the things we touch on is when there's a disaster shared by many people, someone says, everybody's disaster is nobody's disaster. There was a spirit of camaraderie, in a sense.
Yes.
Fear of the ragged stranger, because there were many ragged strangers. And so people, poor help poor, interestingly enough, you know. And those, I remember as a kid on a streetcar then. I still say streetcar instead of bus. Give myself away. Do you say streetcar, Louis?
Yeah.
Instead of bus, you know. Yeah. So on streetcar, people would get off and hand the paper to somebody else, the newspaper.
That's right.
They'd snuff out a butt of a cigarette and they'd give it to someone else. There was this, the bonus march when Hoover was president, the World War I vets. They went to Washington to get a bonus, you know, to claim it. They didn't get it. And they went there by freight. And every 100 miles or so, the train would stop at some town. And they'd bum the town. They'd pass the hat around. But the townspeople gave them money. The townspeople gave them food. They were not afraid of strangers. That's one of the important
things. Louis, what are your recollections of the Depression? What do you remember most about it?
Well, we caught a lot of difficult at times, but you can cope with it. I mean, I had just as much fun as I did and nowadays because we know how to go about it. And I was blowing the horn, and it was rough, but I got along. Me and my mother and my sister.
The blues.
Yeah.
Does some great art come out of hard times?
Yeah. It's some great art. Well, of course, the blues was played by the jazz man like Armstrong, but the Federal Theater, remember the government, this is interesting, the WPA, Progress Administration. And the Federal Theater came into being. Actors were employed by the government, $85 a month, $94 a month. But new kinds of plays came into being, like Living Newspaper. Then it was like mixed media today. Orson Welles broke in
as a result of
Federal Theater. Yeah. And post office, public buildings, even today you find paintings, murals, Federal artists. There was music and also, in literature, every state has a guidebook. It's marvelous. That came out of the WPA Writers Project. So there was a kind of art. Again, it was people were sort of working together despite the adversities. And there was
a funny thing. Even this day and age, though, Monty would know more about it, and Louis, because they're from New York. But remember during the blackout, people reacted toward one another?
I was working. I opened that night.
Yeah. You opened the night of the blackout?
It's one of the famous stories. I opened that night.
You could write your own version of this.
Yeah, that's true. I opened that night, and everybody came down, and they were all dark. I did.
How did they see you? Did they have candles lit or
what?
Well,
everybody was just feeling everybody up, you know? I mean, feeling their way around. Feeling their way, you know what I mean? But you could hear somebody's voice.
Yeah. Louis, you had already, seriously, you had already made it during the Depression. Hadn't you?
Well, in a way, yeah. Because
you were a star.
I got along from a kid. I mean, I played with all the old-timers, and it wasn't so rough for me, you know. Wasn't making a lot of money, but, you know, I had that bread on the table, you know.
Yeah, but see, Louis. Yeah,
more than average kid, you know.
Well, Louis, during the depths of the Depression, 32, you were a smash in London, the Palladium.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't pay it no mind. Yeah. The public made me want to do all that. I was satisfied just sitting up there with King Oliver and then playing second trumpet, you know. So they put all that on me, you know.
Sure.
The debut.
What do you think a depression in the 70s would bring?
Oh, that's a rough one. That's a question that comes up. It's a question I didn't ask. People themselves volunteered this. What would happen today? Because one guy was a bailiff. He evicted people, you know, during the evictions then. He was surprised at the passive attitude of people then. Would it be so today? I doubt it.
You think we could face it again?
I wonder if they would face a massive depression of that depth. They would... People would break into places. Sally Rand says they would have to break into places to survive, to live. And this is what we have to face. What would happen? Would it be like Germany following World War I? Would repression occur? This is a question that comes up. The other question is, with peace, assume we have peace, and we have to, you see. It was the war that ended the Depression, you see. So the question always comes up. We have to face up to ourselves, to our history, what we are and what we can be. I suppose if there's a reason for writing the book, I didn't think of it at the time. When you never think of why you're doing a book, you do it. And when it's all over, then you're startled at the response to it. You don't expect it, you see.
I have great faith in the American public.
I do, too.
I think they're resourceful.
I, and this one last point, if I may. I have tremendous faith that if we could find out exactly what our history is, face up to it, the American people as such can survive. But we have to face up to truths, though, and not fantasy.
I haven't read it, but I'm looking forward to it, and I know everyone is. The book is called Hard Times by our guest, Mr. Studs Terkel. Thank you, Studs, very much. Be right back. Louis, you're going to sing a song for us, and you've chosen a song that I don't associate with you, called I Surrender, Dear.
Oh, yeah, that's one of our big numbers all over the world.
Really?
We call it our Tots number, you know.
Well, you know, I asked your wife, Lucille, why you wanted to sing it. She said, I don't know. He recorded that before I met him. I'd like to know the reason why he wrote it.
Way back there. That's the most beautiful number.
What
that's
a great
one of the
song.
Most beautiful tunes.
Wasn't that written by one of the original rhythm boys with Bing Crosby?
Yeah, and
Harry Lillis was his name, I think.
Sing it from
Harris.
The Coconut
Harris.
Grove every Harris. Night when I was at the Cotton Club in Culver City. And he sing that every night from the Coconut Grove.
Yeah, Harry Barris, that was his
Harry
name.
Harry Barris, Bing Crosby, and Al Rinker.
Al Rinker, yeah.
And I always thought it was a beautiful thing.
Well,
yeah.
It'll be especially beautiful when you sing it.
We call it our torch, you know, way back then.
So no Satchmo's going to torch it up for us.
Stay away, but it costs more than I can pay. Without you, I can't make my way. I surrender, dear. Yes, I may seem proud, I may act gay. Oh, but it's just suppose I'm not that way. Cause deep down in my heart I say, oh baby, dear. Yes, little me things, what we doing, baby? First step in part of the game, baby. Landing, spice to the wind. Yes, I don't care who's to blame. When skies appear and shadows fall, hot mama, you hear my voice call to you, my life, my love, my own baby. I surrender.
Louis, the week is going too fast because I'm enjoying it so much.
What do you think about me?
Tomorrow, one of your good friends and my good friends will be here with us. Sammy Davis Jr. is going to be here tomorrow. Yeah. We'll have Pete Fountain.
Homeboy.
We're going to jam it up a little bit.
Yeah,
huh?
I'll be glad to see him. I haven't seen him in quite a while now.
He's a beautiful, beautiful guy.
Yeah, and all these boys. They were all kids when I left.
And we're going to do some New Orleans music tomorrow. Pete's here, you know. And Sammy, might get Sammy to do play some drums for us.
Oh, yeah.
All you have to do is say, here he is, and he'll do an hour and a half. You know?
Yeah, that'd be. It's great.
What's your favorite recording of yours?
Of now? Well,
all the things you've recorded.
Well, of all of them, I still keep my theme song in. When it's sleepy time down south.
Yeah. Oh.
Everywhere I go, and just hit eight balls there.
Eight balls? The one I like is Blueberry Hill.
Well, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah?
Yeah, all nice, as long as there ain't no mistakes in them, that's right.
I want to ask a special favor of you tomorrow. Will you do Hello, Dolly on the show tomorrow? Louis, I've asked this question of some great singers, and I know that you've got a lot of fans who sing. yes. professionally.
Yes.
Who were some of your favorite singers? Who are your favorites?
Well, Bing was my man all the way. Yeah.
Bing Crosby.
Yes, he was. Now we can go from there, you know, nice. But Bing was always
He's
my
the man.
Man. Huh? That's right.
He feels the same way about you, too. How about Ella?
Ella's great, too. Yeah. Saw her grow, you know.
They tell me the other night she was at the Waldorf and you were in the room and she introduced you and you got up and did a couple of hours
yeah.
with her. I'd like to have been there. Boy, that was some
nice.
Show.
We ham up tunes beautifully together.
Nice. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our guests, Anna Maria Alberghetti. Thank you for being with us
thank
again.
Thank you. It's
and
great
have fun
being back.
In
thank
the Orient you. And on your sailing trip. Marty Rock,
thank
the
you.
Third.
Thank you very much.
I'm very happy that you're relaxed here. Because
thank you.
We're very relaxed with you, too.
Thank you very much.
Stud Circle, good luck with Hard Times. I don't think you need it. It's going to be a smash. And Louis, we'll see you tomorrow with Sammy
yeah.
Davis Jr., Pete
okay.
Fountain, and we hope we see all of you too. Bye-bye.
Transportation and other consideration provided by National Airlines. National flies nonstop every day between Miami and London with the only in-flight movies. National says, you're going to have a great flight. Automobiles and other considerations provided by Chevrolet, featuring the Caprice Sedan. Get on the move with the luxury one of the Chevrolet 70s, Caprice. Guests at the Mike Douglas Show stay at Philadelphia's Warwick Hotel.
The back, some kind of way he gets them in there.
He does his own setups.
Yeah.
Well, you got the Dolly Thursday.
Yeah.
We've been building to that one.
Love it.
Little tease in there.
Yeah, nice.
Maybe you do Blueberry Hill on Thursday to open mic.
Yeah, it's just a good Dolly Arms. Love it.
Jam session, it's like you and Mike Sennett in Basin Street.
Thank you.
The Saints, we're on the show. The Saints. And then the people. The guys. Screw around, everybody.
That's a good idea. Good show.
We'll have Zooty sit down there in the front row,
yeah.
You know.
This is Mike Douglas. Join co-host Louis Armstrong and me for our next show with Monty Rock III and Anna Maria Alberghetti. Hello, this is Mike Douglas. Tune in for our next show with co-host Louis Armstrong, Anna Maria Alberghetti, discussion of the Depression years with author of Hard Times, Studs Terkel, and Monty Rock III. This is Mike Douglas, Anna Maria Alberghetti, Studs Terkel, Monty Rock III, and Louis Armstrong are featured on our next show here on TV 3. 4, 5, 6, 7. I just fill that in. All
right. For once in a lifetime, I feel like a giant. I soar like an eagle. Though I had wings,